From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 633, Modernizing the Network with guest Jeff Stokes, recorded Thursday, March 14th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. To find out more, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back someone I haven't had on the show in a long, long time. And his bio is all new. It's Jeff Stokes, who's been in the IT industry for, holy man, how long? Since 1995?
Yeah.
Starting out at DEC and then becoming, climbing the system administrator ladder. When I knew you, you were a senior premier field engineer at Microsoft. And prior to that, he was working the escalation queues for Exchange Server. He used to do the Dude, Where's My PFE blog back in the day. And these days working for a company called Tanium.
Yeah.
What's Tanium?
We're an endpoint detection / operation / security platform for your enterprise.
Yeah. I get it.
Kind of like an operating system for your network, if you will.
Awesome. And services around that so that I have some confidence of what's going on in my network.
Yeah, we've got, we have like this universal platform, and then we can just kind of bolt on modules for whatever the customer's use case is. We just recently released one for doing operating system upgrades to Windows 10.
Nice.
Yeah, we got Tim Mittner and Keith Gardner working with us. They came up with that one.
Little contingency of old blue badges there.
Oh, yeah. I think there's 45 of us or something now.
Holy man, that's something.
Yeah.
So what are you working on?
Well, I do a lot of performance and, Windows debugging. It's that classic, you're the sort of a new vendor in an environment, and then when things start to go bad, like a performance thing or blue screens or whatever,
right?
You at least have to prove it's not you, right?
Yeah.
And, just to get the customer at ease. And so I've been doing a lot of analyzing kernel dumps, which it's kind of interesting. We don't really reside in the Windows kernel. So
it's not you. And yet they're blaming you anyway. And
you see the problem. Yeah.
So, I know exactly, this one well. Yeah. Back in the old days when I had my startup Strange Loop and we built a network appliances for proving performance, we got blamed for a lot of stuff. And the system engineering experience, getting that product in the data center, making it work well, your first job was to figure out what was wrong with their network. And everybody had something wrong with their network. That was just sort of reality. And so, first fix their problems, then deploy your product.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, a lot of enterprises, you get the pressure to do more with less. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, push to get higher density in your virtualized environments and things like that. And so you come in with an agent, and we go to great, great lengths to, be a very small footprint on an endpoint. But, if someone asks a question that is sort of like, think about like back in the day with WMI queries for like logon scripts where you could do a select star.
Right.
And, take 15 minutes to log on. So Tanium gives the administrator kind of the ability to do something like that, if they made that mistake, right? It's kind of like a big loaded gun. So what we do is we train the user and the operator and all that so that doesn't happen. But back to my point, you have this sort of thin endpoint agent on them, and then it's like, well, what's the cost of having that there? What's the cost of asking a question? What's the cost of running like a compliance job for HIPAA or something like that? And so there's a lot of analytics that I've been doing to kind of prove that this is – this is a performant sort of operation that you're getting into here.
Right.
See a lot of problems with it's kind of the classic antivirus exclusions thing, but it's sort of like taking another step where are you familiar with Bruce Dawson at all?
No, I don't know. Who's Bruce Dawson?
Bruce is a guy. He runs the blog Random ASCII, and nice. He's like a guy that codes for Chrome now. And like big time Windows performance debugging blog. And he found this thing. It's like 24 gig of memory being eaten by zombie processes. And, you know, he kills one agent on the box and gets 24 gig back. And
I've had that experience, too. I call it Chrome.
Well, oh, yeah.
Did I say that out loud? That's not right.
Yeah. But so we're seeing a lot of this kind of zombie thread, zombie process kind of behavior.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it's like fast boot where the kernel kind of doesn't let stuff go, maybe, or right. What's going on. But
I'm making a joke, but you're talking server in this scenario, right?
Like, no, endpoints too.
Endpoints like, too. So on the client, yeah, giant yeah. zombie. I mean, I think of the 90s as the memory leak era. Is yeah. it somehow back in the 2019?
It is, yeah. We're finding like agents scanning agents. You know, like I had one customer where, you know, they said, "Hey, we put you in our VDI farm and it's not going well." And
right.
So we went and looked. And it's like, well, the number one consumer of CPU is this sort of privilege escalation when needed application, right? And they're like, "Oh, we just implemented that." And I said, "Okay, but." Let's look at the stack of this. And we went and looked. It's like your antivirus is scanning your tool that decides whether or not the user needs an elevated token or not. It's like, does that make any sense? And like, well, no. It's like you forget that the agents have to be excluded from each other and on things
right.
like that. Yeah. But we've seen zombie threads hold sockets open in TCP. And I mean, there's only so many of those.
Yeah, you know? No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, just 64-bit doesn't really matter on that. It's just part of the RFC for IPv4.
Yeah, and we're still living in IPv4, for better or worse.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, the day of IPv6 networking is going to be like the year of the Linux desktop for gaming, you know?
Boy, oh boy. Well, you know, I did a show a little while ago with Ed Horley talking about IPv6, and he said, you know, it's your customers, you know, those enterprise guys that are the ones furthest away from IPv6. So I can imagine you're just not seeing it if you're working with these big organizations. They're not using it.
No. Most people are turning it off. And, I mean, fortunately now the guidance on how to turn it off from Microsoft's pretty clear. It used to be if you check the box, it was wrong, right? Or uncheck the box. But yeah. Yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. On the debugging side, Microsoft put WinDBG into the Microsoft Store. Mm-hmm. So I used that once. You don't have to install the ADK and a couple of the debugging extensions I used to use when I was at Microsoft are actually public. MEX, which is for managed code, and then a really old one called WinDE.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But
your old PFE skills coming forward there, Jeff.
Totally. Yeah. That and performance. Yeah. ETW tracing and WinDBG and all that. Yeah. It's fun. I'm really happy with where I'm at now.
I'm always fascinated that they haven't really reorganized these projects, these tools, right? All of these tools that largely were built by PFEs in the first place.
Yeah. Well, like the big PFE MPS reports, that got eaten by ADA compliance. Whereas, like, you know, a keyboard or, the Braille keyboards and everything couldn't interpret the commands and stuff like that. And it's just too much work to fix it, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I just read the other day that they have DTrace now for Windows, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's really a nice tracing tool for Linux. You know, it's open source, but now they're basically baking that into the kernel, some of those capabilities. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the crossover in general, since you've moved away from Microsoft now that we have the Windows subsystem for Linux, and you're seeing PowerShell running on Linux and SQL Server running on Linux. And
yeah.
What is this world? Like, what are we? We're all trying to share tools now.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Also, the ability for just to whip up a Docker container that has everything you need. Like, I've been playing with Prometheus and Grafana for doing some graphing of performance metrics and things like that. And you just have to get a Docker image of it and stand it up. It doesn't
right.
take all the, you know, configuration, tuning knobs, all that stuff to get it working anymore, which is nice.
Yeah, I know. Makes everything just a little bit easier. I remember doing this with VMs, right? For a while there, at least internally at Microsoft, and I think for us as influencers, we had access to a library of pre-configured VMs you could download. They were huge, but it saved you a whole bunch of steps, right? It's just a tricking with licensing, and certainly it's not a way you sell a product. But the concept of a Docker manifest, and just, you know, you can go basically assemble this pre-configured instance fairly painlessly. It's powerful stuff. It's very interesting to think about.
Yeah. The other thing that I like a lot is, Chocolaty, you know, for just, oh, I need this, and just go have it install through the command line real quick. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That seems to have, Chocolaty and Boxstarter, like all this stuff seems to have gotten more mature since we, you know, talked about it all those years ago. I just wonder if containers are going to take over our world in that sense. Like, why wouldn't you have every app live in its own container, essentially?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, kind of the idea of, what was it? I think at Microsoft, we called them at first the Metro apps until we got hit with a lawsuit from Germany or whatever.
Right, but, right.
Yeah. You know, that whole idea of, well, it's in a container. I mean, that works great. But then it's like you had the RDP client that was, essentially a sandboxed app.
Yeah.
But then when you try and copy and paste, you can't. Yep. You know, stuff like that. It's like you have to have those sort of bridges. And then once you build those, well, it's not really secure anymore because there's connectivity in and out now. You know what I mean? It's like a constant trade-off of we need more secure. We need it compartmentalized. And then, but we need connectivity to it. We need to be able to put stuff in, take stuff out, and then all we have are these holes, you know?
Yeah. At the same time, it's like, at least it's a declared set of holes. Like, it's not just open. It's like, I poked these holes for these reasons.
True. Yeah.
And that makes me happy, at least, that, you know, we have a little coherency around that. It's certainly the strength of containers is that sort of configuration as code mindset. This is exactly what this container contains and does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like we're still in an interim phase where we're this hasn't permeated as far as it can go.
I think you're right. It's like I worked in Azure for a little bit, and when I came on board in Azure for Microsoft, one of the comments they gave to me pretty early on was, the mindset of the customer of you don't if you're taking like just all of your infrastructure and forklifting it into a cloud provider, right. You're really doing it wrong.
Yeah. Right?
And I think a lot of people, they have to like really understand the cost of what's it take to run this VM that runs at 3% utilization per year, you know, and you might need available, but does it really need, you know, 8 cores and SSDs and everything if, you know, it runs something like once a week?
Well, and I find, people are still lift and shifting into the cloud that way.
Yeah.
But then hopefully they're peeling stuff off of that VM. In my experience, the VM never gets turned off. It just gets scaled back and scaled back and scaled back. Or it never gets deleted. It might even get stopped.
Yeah.
And they start it back up if they ever need it again. But I think it's really hard to get the confidence to actually delete that origin VM.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we one of the kind of pitfalls with that, and I saw this at one of the places I used to work at, where, you know, we had we had these developers that they found out if they requested a VM, there wasn't a budget item for it.
Nice.
But if they asked it for a physical server for, you know, their new app, that they would have to, you know, pony up the cash for the internal, you know, funny money moving back and forth between departments.
Right.
You know, so one of these developers got wise to it and said, well, this test box has to stay up all the time. And one time we shut down the test VMware infrastructure and one of our production apps broke because – you know, it was using the test box as a router.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Dude, didn't tell anybody. No. It's interesting. You know, Tanium has one of the modules we have is a map that can sort of find these things, right? Where it's like, why is this host sending data to the test environment? Which, you know, if you have a prod, you know, production, you know, customer facing thing, and you have something talking back to dev or test, I mean, that
should be a giant red flag.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And from a risk perspective, from a uptime, and then, you know, does that test box have credit card numbers on it? Yeah. We don't know. You know, it's like just, you know, it's just a disaster waiting to happen.
Part of me wonders why it was even possible in the first place. Isn't this about good network segmentation? Like, there should only be one gate into production that is controlled by powers that be.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we just haven't done enough with networking yet. Like, we're starting to see software-defined networking and starting to think in terms of, I know what machines should be speaking to each other and what they should be talking about. And if I don't know, I want to know.
Right.
I just don't know if we're there yet.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of risk if you don't have that visibility into what the network's doing, for sure.
Is this what MAP is doing then? Is just simply watching where the traffic's going between these instances?
You can configure it as, you know, it's supposed to look like this. But yeah, basically what, you know, we can see like the dependencies between, you know, different layers and, you know, the, you know, like the, I always think of it as like the web server, the middle tier, and then the SQL backend, and you'll be able to really perceive, you know, hey, you know, for one thing, it's like these endpoints talk to each other in this way, and this is how your company makes its money. Mm-hmm. But on the other sense, it's like, is it under provisioned? Do you have risk of a single point of failure? Yeah. And so we can also, you know, make those deductions.
Other times that I've turned on, you know, packet sniffing softwares, and then you find out that somebody in IT is running a BitTorrent host stashed away in the server closet somewhere. You did.
Oh, sure.
And I'm not trying to indict anybody. It's just you sort of put out the words like, by the way, we are watching all the traffic and there's a certain amount of BitTorrent running around and maybe you've forgotten. You should probably turn that off before we have to hunt it down.
You know, speaking of that, I just saw an article, I think it was yesterday, that they said something like 30 or 40% of all the Counter-Strike servers are running malware.
Of course they are. Well, because they're stood up by just about anybody, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at it and it's like, well, that's kind of, you know, eye-opening, but yeah, just like what you're saying, you think about it for a minute, it's like, yeah, that kind of checks out.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know? Well, I'm wondering how many of the Minecraft servers are like that too, right? I mean, how many dads have stood up a Minecraft server for their son and never looked at it again?
Yeah, I had a Minecraft hosted in Azure for my daughter. You know, it's like running horse mods and all this stuff. And one of her friends got admin access and gave it to her boyfriend, and he spawned a piece of TNT and did, I forget what he did, but basically he ended up exploding like 65,000 things of TNT. So I get a charge of my credit card about 5 hours later because it's running a full bore 8 cores. And you're, you know, trying to, you know, render all these pieces of TNT exploding and how they interact with each other. It's like, you know, $200 mistake right there. So, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, funny realities, right? Like, this is the things we need to do. But, and I got to interrupt you for one moment there, Jeff, for this very important message. Getting visibility into your network is a smart idea. But do you have the visibility into group policy? With PolicyPack Group Policy Compliance Reporter, you do. If you've ever thought to yourself, I wonder if my group policy settings actually made it there, then PolicyPack Group Policy Compliance Reporter is for you. Instantly know which GPOs and what settings inside those GPOs made it to your endpoints. The next time your boss asks, did that problem get handled? If you want to know the answer, then find out using PolicyPack Group Policy Compliance Reporter. Come to policypack.com and see the videos for yourself and then start a free trial. PolicyPack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell and Run As Radio. I'm talking to my friend Jeff Stokes, and we're talking a little performance tuning, a little bit more network sophistication. I guess this is what the modern organization needs to think about, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And really, it's, you know, I didn't really think about it when I was in, in field engineering, going to all these, you know, customers. But the idea that you have endpoints that you don't even see or know about is really one of the things that I think is kind of eye opening. You know, like you have rogue IT departments that'll just spawn their own stuff up because they think IT is going too slow, or you know, the infamous box under the desk running production code. You know, all that. You know, it's like the sky's the limit on having just a box stood up, right? Because it's so easy. But then is it patched? Is it maintained? You know, is it being scanned for compliance? All that stuff. Right. Yeah, it's pretty interesting problem. And then IoT is just another whole spin on the deal, right?
Well, now everything's a PC, right? You know,
yeah.
Every phone's got enough horsepower to act as a server if you wanted it to.
So, I've got a OnePlus 6T. It's got 8 gig of RAM on it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Unreal.
And it's a phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the network monitoring side is just such a huge part of us as operations folks, and having a responsibility to governance.
Yeah.
You know, actually knowing what's going on is to say, I know what moves in and out of my network every day.
Yeah. It's really important. And it's just interesting. A lot of enterprises are kind of not caught up to that realization yet. You know,
well, have we even clued in that we're all running switches now? We're not running hubs anymore. Like, I think lots of old network folks that just never really got past the hub era.
That's a good point. Yeah, this is probably true.
Yeah, we just plug cables in; they all talk to each other. It's not a big deal, and that's not modern networking at all. You know,
at
least I feel with the cloud, Azure, AWS, Like the fact that you have to specify how these things connect together, that at least you've got a sense of declarative networking. But how many people are doing it on premises?
Yeah, probably very few.
Except for performance, right?
Yeah.
Only when my network's buried do I like, okay, I'll set up some VLANs, as opposed to just that secure by default mindset of these machines can speak to each other and only this one gets to talk outside of that.
Yeah, yeah. But you think about it, you know, why aren't we doing that in advance? Is it lack of time because they're understaffed, or is it lack of, you know, sort of forethought, or some combination of it, or just not what we're used to? I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I feel like how many classes of problem are we eliminating when we start tidying up our networks this way and start thinking about what's supposed to connect to what? How many classes of malware are defeated or at least crippled when we don't have broadcast level networking available that they can just talk to anything?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a bit of work up front, and we know it is. Those first few weeks as you start to lock that stuff down are going to be frustrating because some stuff's going to break that you didn't know was talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Modernizing the network, to me, it seems like that's an awful lot of performance you can grab.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting sort of thought process of, you know, what needs to talk to what. And but you think about it from a security perspective, lateral movement's really one of the things you're trying to prevent.
Sure.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Movements that I know about, declarative communications.
Yeah.
So at least I have a tapestry of who's talking to who and why, and what it actually gives them. What else? External connectivity?
Yeah. That's always interesting to me. I remember one of the customers I worked with when I was in field engineering wanted to basically have everyone bring in their own PC.
Really?
Contractor, employee, whatever, and just access Citrix. And it's like, well, you know, what's sort of the motive of this? And it's like, oh, well, you know, it's security driven. And I kind of look at it and I go, well, are you monitoring the endpoints that are connecting to Citrix then? And they said, well, no. And I said, well, what are you doing about keyloggers? You know, I mean, really, that's all they need is they don't need to intrude on you. They just need to monitor someone's box and pick up all the stuff they're typing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, such a simple thing. And I bet you stopped them in the tracks of that one.
It did. It's like they'd never really thought, hey, you know, we're basically just kicking the can down the road as far as, you know, where the breach is going to be.
Well,
you know?
Increasing the surface area. Yeah, it's not your fault that employee's home laptop got a keylogger installed on it, but you still let them bring it into your network and log all kinds of things.
Yeah, or even they just, you know, they're logging all the keystrokes and not even breaching the network, but you're still seeing everything the information worker's doing in a normal day of work. That can be pretty bad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. The number of times you're going to type a password, the number of times you're going to outline the hierarchy of the organization, like all of that information becomes visible if I can see the keystrokes.
Oh yeah, totally. Reminds me of the old, what was it? Cult of the Dead Cow or whatever. Taking it way back here.
Yeah, no kidding. Holy man, I'm gonna have to include a link. Oh, look, the site's still up. Holy man, the site is still up. I'm gonna put a link into the Cult of the Dead Cow. If you're listening, you need to go to the links and you need to take a look at this. I'm not gonna explain it. Oh wow. Established 1984.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That just means we're old, friend. That's all it means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different times.
This hack yourself mindset. You should at least spend some time seeing at the minimum what the script kiddies can play with today and what it looks like on your network.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Keep an eye on things like Swift on Security has a GitHub of, you know, tuning tricks and stuff for like Sysmon of like templates of, hey, here's if you're using Sysmon to monitor some of the stuff in like early versions of Windows that don't really have like rich ETW.
Yep.
You know, here's what you really should be looking for. And it's kind of eye opening just going in and looking at the config. It's like it sort of gives you an idea of sort of the mindset. You know what I mean?
It's funny. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to Ned Pyle, and the whole Sysmon exploit came up. It's like he was talking about physical security. It's like if you get your machine stolen, somebody can get access to that Sysmon file. Like there's all, unless you've groomed it, there's almost guaranteed to be passwords in that file.
Hmm. Interesting.
Sort of reality, right? Like it's yeah. It's a thing. But it's interesting just to think through these modern security models. We've talked enough about physical security, but it's like how much of this stuff is secured at rest?
Yeah.
All the bit lockers, all of the encryption. And we just don't put the cycles into it.
Well, it was interesting. I always thought BitLocker was pretty solid.
Yeah.
And it is, but you know, when the SSDs came out, when they had that self-encrypting option in the firmware.
Yeah.
Did you notice that last year? I think it was last year, where the you know, basically it turned out that that firmware has a bug in it that you can use to bypass the encryption.
Nice.
So but it turned out that, you know, BitLocker utilizes that firmware by default, or did at the time. So essentially, if anything that was BitLocker that had this sort of chipset on the, you know, SSD, then it was, you know, basically vulnerable to just getting in the clear.
Yeah.
But yeah, Microsoft issued a thing. It's like all you have to do is basically flip a GPO property and then, you know, encrypted as much as it was like a suspend. I don't remember what the deal was for, you know, remediating it, but they had steps for it at least, you know.
And just the recognition that you can't trust the onboard stuff, use the normal BitLocker by flipping a GPO on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, these are the battles. And who's got time to check all those notices and then realize how many machines are using SSD and how many are not? Like, how do I'll flip the GPU, but how do I know it's all going to be cleaned up? Like, I don't envy a guy in the field these days. You know, it's a tough job, and the surface area is large.
Yeah, it reminds me of the old Asimov Foundation series, mm-hmm. where basically the science domains got so complex that you had to specialize in something esoteric just to be good at it, because there's so wide otherwise.
Yeah, too much to know, right? You have to end up knowing less and less about more and more until you know nothing about everything.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
So you have to go the other way until you eventually know everything about nothing.
Yep. I guess there's an event horizon there where it becomes useful versus not useful, huh?
Yeah. Well, and useful is a very relative concept.
true.
But, you know, I know how many folks listening to this show are the IT guy in their organization.
That's the scary thing.
You know, they were the one standing close to the server when the last guy quit, and now they've got the job.
Yeah.
And they're like, how? I'm just trying to work my way through the ticket stack.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really crazy. There was a guy I taught a class, you know, it was back at Microsoft doing Vital Signs, you know, teaching server
push. Right, I remember like Vital Signs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Shane Creamer helped make that. He's with us now, too.
At TVM. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you look at it, and it's like, I was teaching this class, and the guy literally said that he became the server administrator because he was the closest one to the AS400s. Yeah.
I say it as a joke, and it turns out to be true.
Yeah. I mean, that story was like an epic one, because they wanted to virtualize, you know, go to virtualization, but they wanted to use all the AS400s for it. And it was, you know, kind of an interesting concept. A lot of implications in that one, yeah.
People just trying to keep their head above water, do all the things. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. I found a copy of the outline of the Vital Signs curriculum.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. There you go. It's in German, though.
Oh, nice. So it's just there.
Random things. You know, the PFEs are still out there, still doing their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a great job.
Yeah, yeah. I learned so much doing that. You know, being in Fortune 1000 environments for 6 years, basically straight.
Yeah.
You know, flying all over the place. It was really eye-opening. You learned so much doing that.
Yeah, and I always appreciate you guys coming on the show for exactly that reason. You're talking about the actual work you've done, the battles you've actually had, and, you know. And when you talk me through how you keep 50,000 users working in Active Directory, it means that anybody with 1,000 users goes, well, if they can do it, then there's no reason it can't be done.
Yeah,
I just have to figure out what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Active Directory, I mean, one of the first things I did at PFE was they wanted me to do AD wrap, you know, right. So I went on site and we did one. And I mean, this company, it was like a, you know, like a medical hospital network kind of thing. And they had 5 DCs. And when we did the AD wrap, we found only one of them was working.
Wow.
You know,
so they were inches away from death.
Know.
Yeah, of course it didn't.
It's like, well, it's a testament to how, you know, resilient, you know, Active Directory can be, that, you know, you blow 4 out of 5 boxes out of the water and no one even notices it's not working yet.
Just still ran. It's just what scares me. It's like that last one tipped over. You were going to be in a bad way.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's really the problem. It's like, you know, you're supposed to have some resiliency built in so that when you lose that box that's been Old Faithful, you know, you don't lose your entire production environment.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just one of those realities is you've got to have a sense of, and the real problem there is when one of them tipped over, it didn't do anything. Like it didn't tell anybody, hey, you know, this isn't working anymore.
Right. Right.
So yeah, it's, I'm wondering if more and more now, We're expecting the cloud services and the AI stuff to simply figure this out for us and warn us. We, you know, I get an email every day, I think, from some of the Azure services I'm wearing saying, hey, you could tune this or tweak that. Like, pretty powerful.
It is, yeah. There's a, I think, a false sense of security in it, though, right? I mean, especially the AI aspect or even just some machine learning modeling,
yep.
You know, of... Like what does a user in my network look like, you know, based on like what OU they're in, you know, something as simple as that, where you just, you keep track of what they do and then, you know, maybe do patterns or whatever on it, is easy enough. But if you have like a true, you know, trying to think for itself, AI trying to noodle through all that stuff, it might come to some pretty bad conclusions, you know. It's kind of the same fears you have with like the drones, I guess, you know,
yeah.
If you have a self-operating drone and it kills someone, was it the right person or not? Well,
well, and it's interesting to just sort of get into those boundaries of what's appropriate and what isn't. And I do appreciate software that generally, you know, keeps me aware of when things aren't working well, but that sort of spreading around your diagnostics so that you have a sense of what's healthy and what isn't. I love your idea of just being able to characterize users.
Yeah.
I expect a given, you know, given a user of this nature, of this demographic, this is what they're likely to do on my network in a given day.
Yeah.
It's a great question to ask going into a shop. Like, do you have a profile of what your users look like on their network?
Yeah, because you figure like, you know, like the printers that print out like the one-off payroll checks or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly the list of people that have that mapped or can map to it should be really small.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Just simple common sense when you think about it. But it's like, you know, how do you go about, you know, kind of planning and thinking through, you know, the patterns of, you know, who would match this versus that. There's a lot of thought that have to go into doing it right.
Well, and a violation of that doesn't automatically mean some security breach. It's just being notified. So you go, no, that's fine. That I expected that. We have something really going on. But this gets into that mindset of the just enough administration, that we granularize our privileges enough that the exceptions are rare.
Yeah.
You generally don't operate them. But there are exceptions. There's sort of that break the glass moment where it's like, oh, I need to have this power. So I'm breaking the glass. And yeah, it's heavily logged and we wrote up why. And it's always vaguely uncomfortable for admins so that they don't hang around. Yeah, but you know, that's the mindset I think we need to have these days for the state of affairs.
Yeah, I think the day of, you know, the domain admin's logged in as domain admin, you know, while he's checking email and cruising the web, hopefully they're all behind us.
You'd hope it would be over, right? Goodness knows. So what's next for you, Jeff? Where can people learn more about what you're up to?
Well, that's a good question. The publisher for my the books I've worked on wants me to do some like performance troubleshooting, debugging kind of classes. Yeah, webinars. So thinking about doing that just to kind of get back into a teaching thing again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of miss it. Yeah, yeah.
Going to stand up a new blog?
Well, I have this Illuminati Services.
Right.
Made it when my son was obsessed over the word Illuminati a little bit ago, and so I registered it. Yeah, you know how that goes. So I've put some stuff up there, and you know, as far as doing troubleshooting, I did one thing about you know, power plant is always something I used to harp on, and in my lab when I joined Tanium, I was looking at a 2012 R2 box that was a VM. You know, I gave it 8 cores, it was on an SSD, all this stuff, and Windows Update just took forever.
Yeah,
and so finally I go and look at it, and it's like, well, the power plant's balanced, and you go in and mouse over the cores, even in Task Manager, it told you. You hover over the cores that aren't running, and it says they're all core parked.
Hmm.
Well, and I actually didn't know Task Man would reveal that. You know, I figured I have to open Perfmon or something like that. But yeah, I hovered over the core, and sure enough, hey, this core's parked. And it was like 6 out of 8 of them. And it's like, no wonder Windows Updates takes forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Can't actually use the hardware that's available to it.
Yeah, but you know, it takes, like, I've told some customers that it's like, you know, they're a virtualized infrastructure and, you know, hey, you need to enable high perf if you want, like, these updates to go quickly, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, well, it's a VM, it shouldn't matter. And it's like, well, I can see why you think that.
Yeah.
But You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you'd also be mistaken because the software is respecting it at a level it probably shouldn't. And I don't know if you really want a diagnosis and be right or wrong, or you could just turn on the high perf and forget about it.
Right. You
know, problem goes away.
Yeah, I remember talking to the PM that owned the power planning stuff for, I think it was 2012 and maybe 2008 R2. But one of the arguments I made was, you know, it's like you have an enterprise SKU for Windows. Why don't we ship that with a different power plan than balanced?
Right.
Just, I don't know, you know, just putting it out there.
Now you're just talking crazy talk, Mr. Stokes. Goodness.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm known to do that from time to time.
Yes, you are. Hey, Jeff, great to talk to you again. It's been a little while.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
Hope to talk to you again soon. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it for your thoughts on all this stuff.
You bet.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.